Welcome back, warriors and peacekeepers, to another episode of A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero. Today we are looking at Chapter 20, and I suspect this will be a fun one because it seems like the party is about to kick up to the next level. As usual, you can skip the reading part of the podcast and go straight to the discussion part by looking for the timestamp in the description. Alright, here we go. Chapter 20 of Book 1 of Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace. The card tables were drawn out, sets made up for Boston, and the Count's visitors settled themselves, some in two drawing rooms, some in the sitting room, and some in the library. The Count, holding his cards fanwise, kept himself, with difficulty, from dropping into his usual after-dinner nap, and laughed at everything. The young people, at the Countess's instigation, gathered round the clavichord and harp. Julie, by general request, played first. After she had played a little air of variations on the harp, she joined the other young ladies in begging Natasha and Nicholas, who were noted for their musical talent, to sing something. Natasha, who was treated as though she were grown up, was evidently very proud of this, but at the same time felt shy. "What shall we sing?" she asked. "The brook," suggested Nicholas. "Well then, let's be quick. Boris, come here," said Natasha. "But where is Sonya?" She looked around, and seeing that her friend was not in the room, ran to look for her. Running into Sonya's room and not finding her there, Natasha ran to the nursery, but Sonya was not there either. Natasha concluded that she must be on the chest in the passage. The chest in the passage was the place of mourning for the younger female generation in the Rostov household. And there, in fact, was Sonya, lying face downward on nurse's dirty feather bed on the top of the chest, crumpling her gauzy pink dress under her, hiding her face with her slender fingers, and sobbing so convulsively that her bare little shoulders shook. Natasha's face, which had been so radiantly happy all that Saint's Day, suddenly changed. Her eyes became fixed, and then a shiver passed down her broad neck, and the corners of her mouth drooped. "Sonya, what is it? What is the matter? Oh, oh, oh." And Natasha's large mouth widened, making her look quite ugly, and she began to wail like a baby, without knowing why, except that Sonya was crying. Sonya tried to lift her head to answer, but could not, and hid her face still deeper in the bed. Natasha wept, sitting on the blue-striped feather bed and hugging her friend. With an effort, Sonya sat up and began wiping her eyes and explaining. "Nicholas is going away in a week's time. His papers have come, he told me himself. But still I should not cry," and she showed a paper she held in her hand with the verses Nicholas had written. "Still I should not cry, but you can't, no one can understand. What a soul he has." And she began to cry again, because he had such a noble soul. "It's all very well for you. I'm not envious. I love you and Boris also," she went on, gaining a little strength. "He is nice. There are no difficulties in your way. But Nicholas is my cousin. One would have to... the Metropolitan himself. And even then it can't be done. And besides, if she tells Mama..." Sonya looked upon the Countess as her mother, and called her so. "That I am spoiling Nicholas's career and am heartless and ungrateful, while truly, God is my witness," and she made the sign of the cross. "I love her so much, and all of you, only Vera. And what for? What have I done to her? I am so grateful to you that I would willingly sacrifice everything, only I have nothing." There's a footnote here regarding the line, "the Metropolitan himself," and it reads, "In the Russian Church, cousins come within the prohibited degree of affinity, and a special permission has to be obtained for their marriage." Sonya could not continue, and again hid her face in her hands and in the feather bed. Natasha began consoling her, but her face showed that she understood all the gravity of her friend's trouble. "Sonya," she suddenly exclaimed, as if she had guessed the true reason of her friend's sorrow. "I am sure Vera has said something to you since dinner, hasn't she?" "Yes, the verses Nicholas wrote himself and I copied some others, and she found them on my table and said she'd show them to Mama, and that I was ungrateful, and that Mama would never allow him to marry me, but that he'll marry Julie. You see how he's been with her all day? Natasha, what have I done to deserve it?" And again she began to sob, more bitterly than before. Natasha lifted her up, hugged her, and, smiling through her tears, began comforting her. "Sonia, don't believe her, darling. Don't believe her. Do you remember how we and Nicholas, all three of us, talked in the sitting room after supper? Why, we settled how everything was to be. I don't quite remember how, but don't you remember that it could all be arranged and how nice it all was? There's Uncle Shinshin's brother has married his first cousin, and we are only second cousins, you know. And Boris says it's quite possible. You know I have told him all about it, and he is so clever and so good," said Natasha. "Don't you cry, Sonia, dear love, darling Sonia." And she kissed her and laughed. "Vera's spiteful, never mind her. And all will come right and she won't say anything to Mama. Nicholas will tell her himself, and he doesn't care at all for Julie." Natasha kissed her on the hair. Sonia sat up. The little kitten brightened, its eyes shone, and it seemed ready to lift its tail, jump down on its soft paws and begin playing with the ball of worsted as a kitten should. "Do you think so? Really? Truly?" she said, quickly smoothing her frock and hair. "Really, truly," answered Natasha, pushing in a crisp lock that had strayed from under her friend's plaits. Both laughed. "Well, let's go sing The Brook. Come along." "Do you know that fat Pierre who sat opposite me is so funny?" said Natasha, stopping suddenly. "I feel so happy." And she set off at a run along the passage. Sonia, shaking off some down which clung to her and tucking away the verse in the bosom of her dress, close to her bony little chest, ran after Natasha down the passage into the sitting room with flushed face and light, joyous steps. At the visitor's request, the young people sang the quartet, The Brook, with which everyone was delighted. Then Nicholas sang a song he had just learnt. "At night time in the moon's fair glow, how sweet as fancies wander free, to feel that in this world there's one who still is thinking but of thee. That while her fingers touch the harp, wafting sweet music over the lea, it is for thee thus swells her heart, sighing its message out to thee. A day or two, then bliss unspoiled, but oh, till then I cannot live." He had not finished the last verse before the young people began to get ready to dance in the large hall, and the sound of the feet and the coughing of the musicians were heard from the gallery. Pierre was sitting in the drawing room, where Shinshin had engaged him, as a man recently returned from abroad in a political conversation in which several others joined, but which bored Pierre. When the music began, Natasha came in and, walking straight up to Pierre, said, laughing and blushing, "Mama told me to ask you to join the dances." "I am afraid of mixing the figures," Pierre replied, "but if you will be my teacher..." And, lowering his big arm, he offered it to the slender little girl. While the couples were arranging themselves and the musicians tuning up, Pierre sat down with his little partner. Natasha was perfectly happy. She was dancing with a grown-up man who had been abroad. She was sitting in a conspicuous place and talking to him like a grown-up lady. She had a fan in her hand that one of the ladies had given her to hold, assuming quite the pose of a society woman, heaven knows when and where she had learnt it. She talked with her partner, fanning herself and smiling over the fan. "Dear, dear, just look at her," exclaimed the Countess as she crossed the ballroom, pointing to Natasha. Natasha blushed and laughed. "Well, really, Mama, why should you? What is there to be surprised at?" In the midst of the third écossaise, there was a clatter of chairs being pushed back in the sitting room, where the Count and Marya Dmitrievna had been playing cards with the majority of the more distinguished and older visitors. They now, stretching themselves after sitting so long and replacing their purses and pocketbooks, entered the ballroom. First came Marya Dmitrievna and the Count, both with merry countenances. The Count, with playful ceremony somewhat in the ballet style, offered his bent arm to Marya Dmitrievna. He drew himself up. A smile of debonair gallantry lit up his face, and as soon as the last figure of the écossaise was ended, He clapped his hands to the musicians and shouted up to the gallery, addressing the first violin. Simeon, do you know the Daniel Cooper? This was the Count's favourite dance, which he had danced in his youth. Strictly speaking, Daniel Cooper was one figure of the Anglaise. Look at Papa, shouted Natasha to the whole company, and quite forgetting that she was dancing with a grown-up partner, she bent her curly head to her knees and made the whole room ring with her laughter. And indeed, everybody in the room looked with a smile of pleasure at the jovial old gentleman who, standing beside his tall and stout partner, Maya Dmitrievna, curved his arms, beat time, straightened his shoulders, turned out his toes, tapped gently with his foot, and, by a smile that broadened his round face, more and more prepared the onlookers for what was to follow. As soon as the provocatively gay strains of Daniel Cooper, somewhat resembling those of a merry peasant dance, began to sound, all the doorways of all the ballroom were suddenly filled by the domestic serfs, the men on one side and the women on the other, who, with beaming faces, had come to see their master making merry. "Just look at the master, a regular eagle he is," loudly remarked the nurse as she stood in one of the doorways. The Count danced well and knew it, but his partner could not and did not want to dance well. Her enormous figure stood erect, her powerful arms hanging down. She had handed her reticule to the Countess, and only her stern but handsome face really joined in the dance. What was expressed by the whole of the Count's plump figure, in Marya Dmitrievna found expression only in her more and more beaming face and quivering nose. But if the Count, getting more and more into the swing of it, charmed the spectators by the unexpectedness of his adroit manoeuvres and the agility with which he capered about on his light feet, Marya Dmitrievna produced no less impression by slight exertions. The least effort to move her shoulders or bend her arms when turning or stamp her foot, which everyone appreciated in view of her size and habitual severity. The dance grew livelier and livelier. The other couples could not attract a moment's attention to their own revolutions and did not even try to do so. All were watching the Count and Marya Dmitrievna. Natasha kept pulling everyone by sleeve or dress, urging them to look at Papa, though, as it was, they never kept their eyes off the couple. In the intervals of the dance, the Count, breathing deeply, waved and shouted to the musicians to play faster. Faster, faster and faster. Lightly, more lightly and yet more lightly whirled the Count, flying around Marya Dmitrievna, now on his toes, now on his heels, until, turning his partner round to her seat, he executed the final pass, raising his light foot backwards, bowing his perspiring head, smiling and making a wide sweep with his arm, amid a thunder of applause and laughter led by Natasha. Both partners stood still, breathing heavily and wiping their faces with their cambric handkerchiefs. "That's how we used to dance in our time, ma chérie," said the Count. "That was a Daniel Cooper," exclaimed Marya Dmitrievna, tucking up her sleeves and puffing heavily. All right, there we have it. That was chapter 20. What a good time that was. I really enjoyed reading that. And as Reddit user OhMyFangirlFeels said, now, as opposed to the party at Anna Pavlovna's, this seems like a party I would love to be at. It's funny, you know, initially I thought of this name day party as a much more uptight and boring party, but by now I'm definitely wondering why I even thought that in the first place. Like, during the day we had the Count laughing hysterically about Pierre's antics, and then he's invited Pierre back there for dinner, and now this party's just gone next level fun. I think the only thing that could make this party better is a bear. And a policeman to tie him to. Reddit user Kyle is due said, "The dance in this chapter almost seems too rapturous to me, like the calm before the storm. I just picture this as the trailer to a movie. The Rostovs lived a happy life, dancing, playing cards, surrounded by family, until one day, insert major conflict." Did anyone else get that feeling? By the way, how do you like my trailer voice? Maybe I should do voiceovers. Probably not. But yeah, it does seem like, you know, the calm before the storm. I would agree with that. We know that there's some, you know, political turmoil, which is threatening to come to their homes. it's sort of just outside the door, you know, the wolves are just at bay. And, you know, it's hard because we know from history that Napoleon invaded Russia. Spoiler alert for anyone who didn't know that Napoleon invaded Russia. So we know that that's what's going to happen. But I still think that even if we didn't know, you know, put that aside, it is some really masterfully done foreshadowing by Tolstoy. Before the dancing kicked off and everyone started watching Count do his crazy dance, which was a great scene, we had the scene with Sonya weeping in the hall, I think it was. And the thing I got out of this mostly is, first of all, that Sonya is coming to realize that it's not what the family wants for her to be with Nikolai. And secondly, that Natasha and Sonya are very close. It seems that just the sight of Sonya crying was enough to make Natasha cry too. And I didn't get the impression that Natasha was a particularly sensitive person, but, you know, now I'm getting a more complete picture of the character. And so that was a nice thing to learn, that she's very empathetic. Reddit user 100157 said, "I love that there is a designated space in the Rostov household for adolescent female drama." I liked that too, and it kind of gave the impression that they've lived in this house their whole life, which I'm sure they have. That's the way it happens when kids are born and raised in one house. It's like the house itself becomes a member of the family. MacTavertutiana replied, "Yes, with feathers. I think the feathers in the designated adolescent female drama room of the house was some kind of a down quilt or something like that, or a down mattress or something along those lines." So we have that nice little moment between Natasha and Sonya, and then we head back into the party where Nikolai sings a song. Now, again, MacTavertutiana has asked, "It gave me great joy to see the people dancing, but could Nikolai's verses at the end of the quartet foreshadow something?" I think very possibly. It's not often that a piece of poetry or lyric is put into a story, you know, that it's pretty sparingly done. And I think an author will always choose a particular verse carefully if they're going to put it into their story. Sorry, I'm just adjusting my screen there. Sorry about that. Let's have a look at that verse and see. You know, I think one thing that could be kind of foreshadowing is the fact that his last verse actually gets cut off halfway. People kind of lose interest and head to the gallery for a bit of a dance. Okay, so the verse went like this. "At night time in the moon's fair glow, how sweet as fancies wander free, to feel that in this world there's one who still is thinking but of thee. That while her fingers touch the harp, wafting sweet music over the lea, it is for thee thus swells her heart, sighing its message out to thee. A day or two, then bliss unspoilt, but oh, till then I cannot live." ... Okay, well, that last line, "then bliss unspoiled, till then I cannot live," might foreshadow that he doesn't live long enough to find his unspoiled bliss, I suppose. And quite obviously a verse about how nice it is to know that there's a girl out there thinking about him. A girl out there who's in love with him, his girl. You know, he's got two women on the go, this Nicholas. He's got Julie and Sonya. And he's singing a song about the girl who loves him. And everyone sort of loses interest towards the end and just nicks off on him. I don't know what that foreshadows or what that symbolizes, but yeah, I think you could find echoes of whatever that is later in his story. I'm sure that that's what will happen. It might be worth revisiting that verse later in the story once we've seen what happens to Nicholas. All right, I've run out of discussion points for this chapter. There really wasn't much to discuss. You know, there was a lot of the discussion was people just saying how awesome the dance scene was. So what I'm going to do here for you guys is something a little special, something a little different. I've actually got the song Daniel Cooper, the song that the Count requests, right here. One of the Reddit users was kind enough to look it up and share it, a YouTube clip to it. And it's a video of some people doing the dance. And I believe that what they're doing is the dance that the Count was doing. So, right now you're going to hear the music, and I will describe to you what the dancers are doing. If you want to actually watch this, you can look up, Danila Cooper, DanilaKooper, dash, and then it just says Daniel Cooper, like the English translation. And it says dash, and then it has the Russian characters, which I'm assuming just say Daniel Cooper as well. Look that up on YouTube and you'll be able to watch for yourself. Otherwise, I will describe to you what I'm seeing. This is very bad podcasting. Alright, so very Russian looking dancing. Oh, he's doing the arms out. It's very boastful looking dancing. Okay, so what this guy's essentially doing is standing very straight, very erect. His back is dead straight, head very up, you know, chin up. Like, it's extremely proud looking, and he's got his hands behind his back, kind of held together behind his, you know, the small of his back. And so all the dancing's happening with his legs, and he's up and down, and he's all around the place. And then he'll do a little leggy kick here, and then a squat up and down real quick, and the arms stay tucked behind his back. He does a little bit of that, and then out come the arms in this, like, open wide gesture of rock star, spreading his arms like, did you guys see that? How good am I? Now a woman's come out, and he's just sort of standing back and watching. She's doing a little, oh, look at me, I'm ditzing around. Little curtsy here and there, gentle little wrist flicks. And now she's joined by two more women doing similar dainty things. He's doing very exaggerated bows. And he's beckoning someone from the side. All right. I'm skipping forward. Oh, okay. All right. So there's two more guys. So there's three guys and there's three girls, and they're doing a little bit of trading back and forth. It's like the guys will stand around and look at the girls like, did you see that? Oh, very good. Very interesting. Oh, look at that. While the girls do a little jig. And then it swaps, and the girls sort of check out the guys while they do their little straight back, squatting up and down, spinning around dance. Alright. So the gentlemen are dressed in these all red suits. They're probably a traditional Russian thing, but all I'm seeing is like the Beatles in Sgt. Pepper's. Alright. Hard to describe. I think Tolstoy did a better job of describing the dance than what I just did, so I apologize for that. But hey, at least you got to hear the song, you know, get a gist of what that band up in the gallery was playing. Alright, keeping it short today. I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.